This episode of the Golf Professional Growth Project is brought to you by Golf Genius Software. Less work, more fun, more revenue. You are listening to the Golf Professional Growth Project. My name is Dean Candle, and I'm on a mission to help you, today's golf professional, build the skills it takes to thrive at work and succeed in life. I'm going beyond the traditional education that focuses on golf-specific training and digging deeper to find the real skills, the methods, and the tactics that the most successful people inside and outside of our industry use every day to achieve long-term success. Thank you for joining me. We need more golfers, more rounds, more events, more members, more revenue, more. We have to grow the game. We have to run this beginner program. We have to try foot golf. Did anybody actually try foot golf? For years and years, this has been the refrain from golf professionals, golf course owners, the PGA of America, and many others. Our jobs have been focused on getting golfers to our facilities so those facilities can survive. So whenever we, the golf professionals, were faced with an opportunity that would generate more play or a potential membership or more revenue, we were in the habit of saying yes. And then a global pandemic shut the world down, and golfers came flocking. Who knew that's what it was going to take to generate record growth in our game? Now, many clubs and courses have more golfers than they can handle. Events are selling out in record time. Tee sheets are full from start to finish. Golf equipment is being sold literally faster than it can be produced. So in a business where we have been trained to say yes, yes, you can play, yes, you can bring guests, yes, we'll host your event, yes, I can get that club for you, and on and on and on, we as golf professionals now find ourselves saying no more than ever before. No, there are no tee times. No, there isn't any space in that event. No, we cannot have that event. No, we don't have memberships available. In many ways, it feels counterproductive. It's against everything we've been trained to do. That's why it's more critical now than ever before to understand how to deliver bad news. As I found out in a conversation a few years ago, knowing how to say no and tell someone something that they don't want to hear is literally a science. Experts in behavioral psychology have studied the tactics that are most effective at delivering your message in a way that diffuses angry situations and will limit the pushback you get from our now disgruntled members and customers. I recently revisited this conversation and found it more timely than ever. The lessons in this conversation should be some of the first ones we learn as golf professionals. Whether you've heard this before or not, it's definitely worth another listen. Our expert that we're learning from is Richard S. Gallagher, author of the Customer Service Survival Kit. Some of the critical lessons we'll hear from him are, being nice and polite is great, but it doesn't help an upset person feel better. Leaning into criticism is much more effective than explaining why or playing defense. And the key to diffusing a difficult situation begins with acknowledgement. So what does this all mean? Let's dive in. Here's Rich with a little background.
Back when I went to college back in the 1970s when dinosaurs roamed the earth, I was actually one of Cornell University's first dual majors in engineering and psychology. There's no such thing as a degree in customer service, and mine's in engineering, actually. So I spent many years in the software business and eventually moved into management and became director of customer services for a large West Coast software company. Later, I moved back east to upstate New York, where I'm from, and managed a 24-hour call center operation. And we created near-perfect customer satisfaction ratings, near-zero turnover, and a 25% increase in revenue in the middle of a recession. So I'm really passionate about the mechanics of how you treat customers and how you deploy those mechanics across an entire team of people.
Well, good. So I can only imagine the challenges of managing a call center like that. I know that as golf professionals, there are days we feel like we're at a call center as well.
Absolutely.
You know, with a bunch of angry customers calling, you know, a cable company or something. But so we're going to help with that today. So you make the case in the customer service survival kit that, unlike probably most of us would think, that these bad service comes from people being rude or maybe not caring. You make the case that it really comes from something else.
That's right. I think the single biggest reason for bad customer situations is fear. And here's the way I'll lay it out. When I'm up in front of an audience, I'll often ask them, how many of you have had a situation with customers that have just totally gone sideways? And probably about 2/3 of people raise their hand, sometimes more. But then when I ask them, how often did that happen? The answer is not that often. I'm personally a veteran of about 25,000 customer transactions, and I can count the number of situations that just really went off the rails on maybe the fingers of a hand and a half. But I remember all of those situations, and my experience managing large-scale customer contact operations is that people worry about twisting in the wind in a bad situation, and so that causes them to approach every customer from a defensive posture that actually causes a lot of those customer situations. These are situations, for example, where a customer is not happy about something and you lead with saying, I'm sorry, that's your policy, instead of acknowledging them first. And then that escalates them, and then we respond to that escalation by being defensive.
What we just heard was one of the keys to Rich's teaching. When we're dealing with a difficult customer, our initial reaction is to get defensive and start explaining our policy or justifying why this situation occurred. How many times has that been your process? Have you ever started an email by explaining your policy or talking about some factor that impacted, say, pace of play when someone told you their round took too long? I know I've done this too many times to count. So again, it's not about explaining why. So what do we do instead? Well, it begins by learning the skill of acknowledgement.
You know, if you try an experiment, if you go to the grocery store tonight or go out to eat and listen to people talking to the customers they serve, one of the things you're going to notice is that 99% of the time, nobody ever acknowledges or plays back what a customer is saying, even when things are going well. And it is a skill that's not part of our human nature and needs to be taught. And when you learn the skill of acknowledging people well, that more than anything changes everything about how customers react to you. So let me walk you through an example of what people try to do when I ask them to acknowledge people. The first thing they'll often say is, I understand. What's the most common thing that people say back when you say, I understand? No, you don't.
Right.
and the reason for that is, I understand is a catchphrase. 50 years ago, it may have meant, I understand you, but nowadays, if you use it, it's gotten so worn by overuse as a distancing phrase that most people interpret it as drop dead, I'm not listening to you.
Well, right, so it just comes out. Yeah. You just say it, right?
Of course, because we don't know what else to say.
Right.
So here's what psychologists would prescribe instead of that, would be one of what I call 4 octane levels of acknowledging people. The lowest bargain basement level is paraphrasing. And paraphrasing is simply a matter of taking somebody's words, gift wrapping them in their own word, your own words, and then handing their thought right back to them. It sounds really lame to be just playing back what somebody says to you, but when you actually do it, what you're doing is you're sending 3 powerful messages. You're saying, I heard you, I processed what you're saying, and it's safe for us to talk about it. So this is when a customer comes up to you and says, I'm really frustrated about this. And you say, wow, this sounds like this is really inconveniencing you. That's paraphrasing what they said.
Right, as opposed to, I understand you're frustrated, right?
Right. Well, and that's an okay thing to say too, although I try to avoid the catchphrase, I understand.
Sure.
I still catch myself doing it too, because human nature is very strong and it pulls us in that direction. So think of it this way. Paraphrasing is saying, here's your words. The next octane level, the next step up from there, is what I call observation. And this is where, instead of telling them what they said, you play back to them what they feel. And since you can't crack open their head and see what they're feeling, you have to take a guess at that. So that would be something like, I can tell by your tone of voice how frustrating this is for you, or I can see how important this is to you. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's interesting is when I was training to be a psychotherapist, one of the things I did was I served as a volunteer in a suicide prevention crisis line for a while. And one of the things they teach you is to always play back and guess at what the other person's feeling. And even if you're guessing wrong, if you say, wow, you sound frustrated, and they're saying, no, I'm not frustrated, I'm hurt or I'm angry, they still appreciate the fact that you're locked in on how they're feeling. I do put a little asterisk in front of this technique because you do need the right connection and sincerity for it to work. Otherwise, it can sound patronizing. So if I don't know you very well, Dean, and I say, well, Dean, I sense you're feeling a lot of anger here, you might not react well to that. But if we have a good connection, I say, wow, that must have been frustrating for you, then we're connected. So I'm of the opinion we don't acknowledge each other anywhere near enough. And again, this works about 85% of the time. But of these four levels, this is one where you do have to use your gut.
Well, we're actually, though, for those of us listening that are working at private clubs or mm-hmm. if we're in situations where maybe we're dealing with a student of ours that we teach regularly mm-hmm. that we know, or maybe it's a customer that's regularly at our daily fee facility or resort, mm-hmm. we know them. That's makes this a little bit easier. I would think that if we can think back, well, I know how important this tournament is to you, or I know how mm-hmm. hard you've been working on your game, and et cetera.
Perfect.
I think that we have a little bit of an advantage rather than somebody that's at a grocery store upset about something, right?
So, well, you know, you frame that perfectly, Dean, because, you know, the fact that you know somebody, that's one dimension in terms of what kind of acknowledgement you can use. If you sense the other person can sense your sincerity, you can also use this technique and have it work for you. But this is a matter of using your gut in practice. Which leads me to the next octane level, because this is where I actually like to live most of the time, because it's not only more powerful, it's also a little safer. And this is called validation. So think of it this way. Paraphrasing is, here's your words. Observation is, here's your feelings. Validation says, I see how you feel, and I think you have a right to feel that way. I think your feelings are valid. And you can say this even if you violently disagree with somebody or if you can't give them what they want, because you're saying, in your world, I get that this makes sense to you. So validation is really simple and really mechanical. All you do is compare them to other people. So all you have to do is just invite a big crowd in your answer and say, nobody likes not getting the right tee time, or everybody hates having to follow these rules, you know, when they don't know about them. Mm-hmm. So validation, even though you're not changing the rules, or even though you can't give them that tee time, you let them know, I totally get where you're coming from, and it makes sense, and I'm framing you as a totally reasonable person.
And that's one of these that really, when I said this turns some things upside down for me, I would say that's one of them.
Right.
Because, you know, naturally, we may think that, well, if I say that to this person, if I say, I totally get it, and of course you're upset, am I telling them that I'm wrong and they're right no matter what? So that's, I think, what makes that such a challenge, but yet mm-hmm. probably why it's so valuable.
You see, that's a brilliant observation. What you've just laid out the reason why most people don't do this, because it feels like it's dancing dangerously close to agreeing with the other person, which you're not. But when you actually do it, this is that driver versus pedestrian split that we talked about earlier. People want to be heard. People want to be acknowledged. People want to feel like there's some value in them having put themselves out there to come and complain to you. And that's why these techniques are so important. And that leads then to the highest octane level, which almost nobody does for exactly this reason, which is identification. Identification is when you put yourself into it. And again, you're still not agreeing with them. What you're saying is, if I had your map, if I saw the world the same way you do, which I don't, I could see feeling the same way. So identification phrases would be, you know, if that happened to me, I'd be furious too. Or, you know, that would bother me as well. Or, you know, so you're not saying what happened to you wasn't fair. What instead you're saying is, I can see why you thought, I can understand why you thought this wasn't fair, mm-hmm. because I'd react the same way if that's what I had thought.
You know, one of the most common, maybe everyday or seemingly everyday occurrences for a lot of us is somebody coming in saying that play was too slow. That was
right.
You know,
absolutely.
It just took too long to play. And this fits perfectly in there because there isn't a golfer out there that does like to play too slow or whatever they perceive to be too slow.
Of course.
And what a great way to kick off or respond to that situation instead of, well, it was really busy there and I'm out there and I'm sorry. Or, the course is playing tough today, so sorry, there's nothing we could do. But, you know, saying that, you know, I totally get it. Nobody likes to play when it's that slow. I certainly don't. And I would, you know, that's a question. Is it all right to say I would be upset too, or I wouldn't want to play at that pace as well?
In that case, totally. There's nothing wrong with saying with as much mustard as possible. I hate it when people play slow. Mm-hmm. You're not throwing your golf club under the bus. You're not changing the rules. You're not even saying that anybody or anything is wrong. You're just saying, you know, that's a human emotion, and I get that. And boy, I'd feel the same way too.
Okay, let's stop for a minute here. Because as Rich said, acknowledgement is the key to diffusing difficult situations. So if you get nothing else from this episode and from this training, you need to understand the skill of acknowledgement. So let's just go through this real quickly. So as Rich said, there are four octane levels. And the first is paraphrasing. So you're saying, here are your words. As Rich said, you're going to gift wrap them up and deliver them back to the customer. So that could sound something like, it sounds like you are X or Y. Or by the sounds of it, it appears that you are, and then say what they are. So that's paraphrasing. The second was observation. So now you're showing that you understand their feelings. So an example would be, I can see by your tone of voice, or wow, this sounds like it's really frustrating, or I sense that you're feeling X or Y. So now you're observing and you're doing this on a deeper level. And as Rich said, when we have connections with our customers and these people that we're talking to, we can use observation and maybe insight that we have about that person to help us really know where they're coming from, and then show them that we understand that on a deeper level than if it's somebody that we're just running into for the first time. The third, and where Rich said he likes to live, is validation. And this is really powerful when you can do this. With validation, you're saying, I see how you feel, and I think your feelings are valid. So the key to learning this skill, Rich told us, was to involve other people. Invite a big crowd in by saying things like, oh, well, nobody likes to X, Y, and Z, or I think we'd all be frustrated if that happened to us. So the key here is that it's okay if you disagree, and by acknowledging and validating their feelings, it doesn't mean that they are right, but you're showing that you see how they feel, and how they feel is okay, even though they may not be correct in this situation. But notice that we didn't jump in and start explaining. We haven't said at any point what our policy is, or why this happened, or why that happened. We're just saying, I see how you feel, and I get it. Now let's talk about a resolution. And the fourth was identification. So in the third, it was about inviting in a crowd. In the fourth, identification, it's about putting yourself into it. So this is even deeper by saying, wow, if that were me, I'd be upset too. Or if that happened to me, I'd be frustrated. That would bother me too. I think to go one step further, if something like that has even ever happened to you, maybe throw that in as an anecdote. Well, that happened to me the other day at this place, and I can tell you, I was frustrated as well. So at no point did we use these catchphrases like, I understand, or okay, and leave it at that. And we didn't start explaining, but we started by acknowledging. That diffuses a difficult customer situation by acknowledging their feelings and showing them that we understand, not just saying that we understand. And the great thing is, these four tactics, they work in email and they work in person. So a lot of times we get emails from angry members or customers, and we're trying to diffuse a difficult situation via email. Well, just type this out. And it's even a better opportunity because you have time to think about your response. You have time to plan it out. You have time to decide which one of these four octane levels you're going to apply to this situation. And you really have a chance to really get it right rather than under the pressure or under the gun of somebody in your shop or coming into your office and telling you that they're upset to your face. By email, you have an even better chance. So again, your four options are paraphrasing, observation, validation, and identification. It's critical that you try putting these into practice because you will build the skill of acknowledging as a habit, and you will get better at it, and it will improve how you deal with these situations. So now we understand the most important skill, which is acknowledgement. So in this situation, customers come in, they are angry, we use our best acknowledgement tactic in order to address them, but then we still have to deliver bad news. So even if we acknowledge, it's not over yet. So what Rich is going to tell us now is how to actually position the bad news in stages with a tactic fittingly called staging, in order to deliver the bad news in a way that doesn't get the customer all riled up and angry all at once, but still we're able to get our point across, give them the information that they need to hear, whether they want to or not, without them getting too upset. So how do we stage? Let's find out.
This again borrows from behavioral psychology. It's a technique I call staging, and it involves giving people bad news in stages. And it's based on a technique of psychology known as systematic desensitization, which means if you spoon feed bad news to people in small stages, they can process it and absorb it and get used to it. And they may not be happy, but they'll absorb that bad news without going off on you, which is the goal that you're looking for here. It's best explained by example. Okay. Let's say I take my car in for a minor rattle on the dashboard. I call up at the end of the day and they say, yes, Mr. Gallagher, you know, your car's ready. It's going to cost $800. So how am I going to react to that? What?
Right.
I'm going to react with a lot of shock, anger, and annoyance. And I'm going to take that out at the person at the other end of the phone. They're going to go home and say, you know, it's not my fault these cars break down. It's not my fault that these repairs are expensive, but they take all this anger on me. It's not fair. So now let's replay this with staging. And then let's turn this around to the golf world. If I start off with the first step of staging, which is a good introduction, the core principle of staging is give the bad news second. There's nothing disingenuous about that. The first thing you give them is an introduction that prepares them for the fact that you're going to say something very important to them. There's no all-purpose introduction, but good ones involve either acknowledging them or walking them through what your procedure is or what's going to happen. So I might say, you know, Mr. Gallagher, had hoped that your repair would be a minor repair because it seemed like a minor rattle in the dashboard. Unfortunately, it turned out to be something more serious than that. You may know, Mr. Gallagher, that you have a late model car. And now I move into step two of staging, which is explanation. I go through the details or the reasons for what's happening with as much detail as possible. We don't realize this, but when we're in a difficult situation delivering bad news, we tend to say as little as possible because we're afraid of how the other person's going to react, and that makes us seem like a block of ice. Mm-hmm. So I'd be walking through and saying, you have a late model car, and it has an airbag system, and when things go wrong with it, we tend to have to replace the entire system, and those tend to be expensive repairs. So at this point, I'll ask how much the repair costs. They'll say it's going to cost $800, and then at that point, I'm not happy, but I'm not angry at the other person at the end of the phone. Then the third step is acknowledge or empathize with whatever they say. And when I say, wow, that's an expensive repair, I'm going to say, right, you are. That is expensive. Let's look at some options together. And this technique works almost magically with practice at defusing situations before they happen when you're delivering the bad news.
Hey, golf pros. How many times have you dealt with a frustrated customer that was never updated on the status of a special order? What about the member that was never told his club arrived as it sat in the corner of the office for days on end? Have you ever wished that you could have a more foolproof special order process so that nothing fell through the cracks and your customers left happy and satisfied every time? Just think about how that could improve your sales. Golf Genius Golf Shop is here to help. Golf Shop is the only product on the market created to help your golf retail business communicate with your customers and organize your orders so you can provide the experience your customers come to expect in today's retail environment. Just like the big box stores and online retailers. Place an order, an email or text goes out notifying your customer. Update the status of an order, and another notification goes out. The order arrives, just click a button and let them know it's here. Plus, you can customize the notifications to match your specific needs. I'm always looking for ways to be more productive and save time. That's why I've been using Golf Genius Golf Shop since it was released last year. I love the efficiency it has added to our special orders. My members appreciate the constant communication, and our staff isn't bogged down sending emails or making phone calls every time an order arrives. I can easily check if an order is taking longer than expected by viewing the special order dashboard, which keeps me up to speed with any orders that need attention. The result is increased sales that come from a more consistent, reliable, and efficient special order process. Put a stop to the endless questions about, did you place my order, or is my order here, and get Golf Genius Golf Shop. For more info, go to golfgenius.com. So before we get into a real-life example of staging in a situation that we could likely fall into, let's talk about the steps of staging again. So remember, in staging, we're delivering the bad news in steps, and we're delivering the specific bad news second. We're never starting with the bad news first. But how are we starting? Well, we start with our skill of acknowledgement, acknowledging the customer, and then we're going to explain in as much detail as possible the information that we need to deliver. So we're not going to skip over details, and we're not going to freeze and stop talking, because when we stop talking and we stop providing details, they think that we don't care, or they think that we're not listening. So we're going to explain with as much detail as possible. And then our third step, we're back to acknowledging or empathizing with the customer, saying that if this happened to us, we would be disappointed too, or we would be angry as well, or this happened to me one time and I was frustrated. So we're back to using that skill of acknowledgement. But now let's hear about staging with a situation I hope hasn't happened to you and I hope doesn't. But now, in case it does, you're going to be prepared to handle it. And for all you rules gurus out there, this conversation took place in 2018 prior to the rules update in 2019. I just found out that a player in our club championship is using, say, we have these distance measuring devices, some of which you can use. There are features that you can or can't use. So let's say he's using one that has a feature you're not allowed to use in the penalties disqualification. So I have to disqualify him from the biggest tournament of the year.
Absolutely. That's a nice meaty customer situation. So here's how we're going to go through this with staging. First, you use an introduction. And in this case, because the consequences are so severe, you want to prepare this golfer for the fact that you're delivering a very important message. So I would start this conversation by saying, we need to talk, and I need to talk about something that we discovered when, you know, we were observing your play on the course. Then in the second part, the details, I'm not going to start with you were a bad dog or you did something wrong. I'm going to start with walking him through or her through what the rules are. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, so here's what we look for in a golf tournament is we have certain distance measuring devices that are okay, certain are not. And those that are not, you know, they're actually showstoppers in terms of people being able to continue in the tournament. And it's only if you've gone through those two steps, the good introduction and then the details of walking the golfer through what's leading up to this, that you've prepared the golfer for the fact that he or she is going to be disqualified. Mm-hmm. So now let's take this a step further. They're not going to be happy about this. We know that. And they're going to respond by saying, what do you mean I'm disqualified? This is terrible. You empathize with that. And I'd be saying, well, of course, this is the biggest tournament of the year. You must have, you know, really, you know, this, I know this meant a lot to you. And so you lather, rinse, and repeat with these acknowledgments, and you're going to find that much sooner than you think, this golfer is going to walk away, at least understanding the situation and not blowing up at you.
I guess one of the unfortunate situations or points about this situation is that there are no other options, right? So
that's
sometimes
correct.
you're lucky to be able to say, well, you know, this is unfortunate. I'm sure you're upset. I understand that, but we can do A, B, or C here. In this case, it's, I'm sorry, the tournament's over for you. So
that's a critically important point because, you know, techniques for managing difficult customer situations do not require you to have a solution. And in fact, they also work when the situation's totally your fault. Let's say that you've, you know, booked two people for banquets at the same time. They're both important occasions and one of them is going to have to not go.
Right.
For example, totally your fault, but you still use the same mechanics to talk through that situation.
So let's hope you haven't had to deliver news like that. But as a golf professional, if you've been in this business long enough, there's a good chance that you have. Now, as it pertains to 2021 and our current situation and why we're revisiting this conversation, I had an example of having to use this season based on all the demand that we've had for our events. So I went back to the skill of acknowledgement. I went back to the skill of staging in order to deliver some bad news to a disgruntled member. So we had record turnout for our big member guests, which is for some people really, truly the highlight of the year. They look forward to it all year. And to add to it, we had to cancel it last year in 2020. So one of the members that has always played in this event since its inception didn't get in the event because of the record demand. He didn't press the button in time in order to get into this tournament that literally sold out in 90 seconds. And I had to deliver this bad news to him. So I started with acknowledgement by saying, I know how much you love this tournament, and I know how much you look forward to it all year, and I know that your guests look forward to it as well. See, we're dealing with record demand this year, and we have more members than ever trying to get into this tournament. It usually sells out in about a day, but today, because of that demand, it sold out in 90 seconds. So at this point, I have you on the waiting list. Now, we usually get cancellations, so there's a chance you can get in, and I'll certainly keep you updated as we move along. Now, he was not happy. He wanted to play in the tournament. He had his comments about the sign-up process and the procedures that we put in place. But it wasn't a horribly angry situation. It didn't go incredibly negative. And in fact, he was pretty kind to me while still being upset on the side about not getting into the tournament. So that's just an example of how you can use that for a situation that you may find yourself in this year in order to try to keep somebody from really blowing up at you. But in our last skill that Rich is going to teach us, we talk about how to handle it when somebody comes up to us and they're already angry. We're not delivering the bad news. They've already gotten it and they're coming right at us.
So as you can probably guess by now, Dean, I have a three-step process for just about everything in life. But this three-step process I'm going to talk about, which I call the AAA technique, is a technique that you really have to follow in order because anger is one of our most powerful and intimate emotions. I wish I had a phrase that took people from angry to not angry. And I don't, unfortunately. I don't think anybody does. But this is a process that you can go through to get people from 95% angry to 75% angry to 55% angry to finally when you're in that 35% angry zone where you can talk to them. Because the single biggest mistake good people like you and I make when somebody's angry is we try to problem solve too quickly when somebody needs to be heard first. Mm-hmm. The reason that people flip the switch from frustrated to angry is because they feel unheard and powerless. And the first thing you need to do is go back to this whole question of acknowledgement. In life in general, and in customer situations, some people like to be acknowledged a little, some like to be acknowledged a lot. That varies by personality type. Some people like to just get down to business. When somebody's angry, that all goes out the window. So the first A of the AAA process is acknowledgement. And you have to use the highest octane level possible. I'd be using, at the very least, validation or, if possible, identification, saying, wow, you know, totally get why you're so frustrated. Then the next step the second A is assessment, and that's asking good questions. Instead of wondering what you can say, you should really think about what can I ask. And so when you ask good on-topic questions, what you're doing is first you're gathering information to help solve the problem. But secondly, you're also calming the person down by turning an emotional situation into a factual one. If you've ever dealt with the police, hopefully not in handcuffs, but let's say you've had a break-in or an auto accident, one of the things you notice about good police officers is they ask a lot of good questions, and they're trained to do that to try to diffuse the emotions of a situation. I've been teaching this technique for 20 years, but I learned it for the first time a couple of years ago when I was in a horrific auto accident. We were in a high-speed rollover accident, trapped in our vehicle in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico. Wow. And when the police arrived in the scene, they peppered me with questions, and I really was struck by how that kept me sane in a situation where I would have easily panicked. And so good questions is a very powerful intervention that you use when somebody's angry. So say, okay, tell me what happened. You know, what are you looking for? You know, what were the circumstances here? Again, plenty of acknowledgement where that's possible. Now you get to the fun part of diffusing an anger situation, which is the third A, which is alternatives. And this is where you're negotiating with the person. And when that person finally gets to the point of where you can ask them what they want to make the situation right, and they demand the moon and the stars, we use another technique that I call the can-can, which is you always respond instead of no with what you can acknowledge and you can do. So when they say, I demand the moon and the stars, the first thing you have to say here is, I totally get why you want the moon and the stars. That makes perfect sense to me. Mm-hmm. Then the second piece is, I wish I could give you the moon and the stars. I could give you half the moon and a quarter of a star if that would help things. You know, would that work for you? And another technique I'll throw in here is what I call the rule of threes. When they come back and say, that's totally unacceptable, you lather, rinse, and repeat. You have to acknowledge why that's important to them, and you have to acknowledge why it makes sense they feel that way. If you don't do that, you're dead. Then you reiterate your limit about giving them half the moon and a quarter of a star. When you do that three times, about 90% of the time, people will understand that that's as far as they can go, and they'll walk away, and they'll give up, and you'll have resolved the situation. So very difficult, very emotional situation, but again, it's a question of mechanics.
If you notice, the skill of acknowledgement has landed inside of all of these techniques. And that's why when it comes down to it, understanding that skill was where we want to start first and why it's so important to practice that and to get good at it. But in this AAA technique, it's the first thing that we do. We acknowledge the situation and then we start assessing by asking probing questions that serve two purposes: give us more information and also help calm the customer down. And then very importantly, the third step is we provide alternatives and we avoid saying no. Now, if you're good at customer service, you probably already do this. Always start with what you can do. But even when we're providing alternatives, we're acknowledging what we can. So saying, yes, I get it that you're frustrated here. Here's what we can do. So building this skill in this AAA technique, when somebody comes in and they're upset with us, is really going to be critical. So as we wrap up this episode, I hope you can see why revisiting this conversation was so important. We're dealing with unprecedented times, and I hate to use that term, but we truly are. The good news is that golf is in a great place, a much better place than it was a year ago or 2 years ago. And it's up to us to keep it there. But we're dealing with new situations. And hopefully by understanding these skills, these methods, and practicing these tactics, you're going to be better at dealing with our new reality. I hope it helps. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Golf Professional Growth Project. Be sure to rate and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and head to golfprofessionalgrowth.com for updates from GPG.